This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, is...
Zachary Frueling.
Well, today we're going to be talking about something that was requested by two of our listeners in the Babel Conference. It was requested by Alex Post and Robin Morrell that we come up with a positive Harry Kim list. So we're going to go with our top three Harry Kim moments in all of Voyager. Now, keep in mind, I'm not the biggest Harry Kim fan, so I only have one moment right now. Perhaps during the show, I will come up with more.
Somehow a rumor got started that we are not Harry Kim fans, and that might be true of you, Suzanne, but it's definitely not true of me. I am not a Harry Kim hater. In fact, I'm even a fan of Harry Kim. I think he doesn't get enough screen time.
I do recall coming out and saying that I don't like Harry Kim, so that's probably where it came from, and they just attributed it to you as well.
Don't let me in with that lot.
Sorry.
As I was trying to think of my favorite Harry Kim scenes, it occurred to me that it's really hard to do because there aren't really Harry Kim scenes. There are a couple of episodes with great Harry Kim scenes, like Timeless is a classic Harry Kim episode. But even though Harry Kim just gets moments as opposed to well-fleshed out scenes, I think those moments are really good when they're really good.
I think Harry Kim was done a disservice by the writers. I mean, Garrett Wong is a really good actor, and they just kept giving him these throwaway lines and throwaway little moments in episodes. It was just blah, and that's really why I don't like Harry, because the only emotion he ever evoked from me was meh.
What bothers me about the way they use Harry Kim is when they use him for comic relief. I'm thinking of the episode Night, when they're all sitting in the briefing room and he says, "Why don't we just think of this as a 2-year vacation?" And it's like the dumbest thing you can say. It's supposed to get a cheap laugh, and it's not a great use of the character. And unfortunately, I think Harry Kim is used that way a lot. I think he's used to give these little one-line snippets of commentary based on what you might consider to be the main characters in the scene's lines are. And he's not deeply immersed in the scene.
Kind of like when Neelix isn't available, they give the line to Harry type thing.
Yeah, yes, I get that sense sometimes. They need someone to throw in a snippy line because they've written a good line and they need someone to say it, and so they have Harry say it.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
And Tuvok gets those lines sometimes, too.
But Tuvoks are funny.
Well, yes. You don't think Harry Kim's delivery is funny?
No, not usually. It's just, Harry Kim just provokes the meh in me. Meh.
So we haven't started talking about our picks yet, but help me understand how you think about Harry Kim. Like, what kind of Harry Kim moments do you like? If it's not the comic ones, then what is it?
I only have one written down. I think I mentioned...
What is that one, Suzanne?
I guess we're going into our lists then.
Let's go into our lists.
My list is very short.
What is your one pick?
Mine would be from The Shoot, where he's standing up for Tom and, you know, waving his thing, "No one touches this man, he's my friend."
That's on my list, too. That's one of my picks.
That is a good Harry Kim moment.
What makes that so good, though? Okay, if you're not a Harry Kim fan in general, what do you love about that scene, then? The one scene on your list.
Don't love anything about it. That was just the only one I could think of.
Wow, you're being so harsh to Harry.
No.
You don't even love the one scene you picked?
I like it. It's a good episode, and Harry did the best he could in it, but just, yeah.
Maybe you're onto something there, Suzanne. Maybe the best Harry Kim moments aren't Harry Kim on his own, but it's Harry Kim in relation to another character. These friendship slash buddy slash colleague moments where it's not so much Harry Kim on his own, but Harry Kim, in the scene you mentioned, Harry Kim and Tom Paris, they've got a bromance, they've got a friendship. And, you know, Harry's standing up for his friend, and that's a powerful moment. But it's not Harry Kim per se, it's Harry Kim and Tom.
Well, no, because Tom is laying on the ground, you know, can't really defend himself. So he's not of much use to anybody, so he's not really in the scene. He's just a lump in the scene.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not that Tom is in the scene. It's that the scene is about Tom.
Well, aren't scenes usually about other people? Unless you're just doing a soliloquy.
I want to see a Harry Kim soliloquy. What would Harry Kim's soliloquy be about?
I don't know.
His parents. His clarinet.
Libby.
I
want to go home.
Definitely Libby. I want to be Captain Proton for once.
No.
Okay. So I agree that that's a great scene. And in general, I like the scenes where Harry Kim stands up to something, stands up for something he believes in, stands up to authority, stands up for a friend, whatever it is, when Harry Kim gets that kind of inner fire, which isn't very often because Harry Kim is a pretty mellow character. He tends to follow the rules. He tends to say, yes, ma'am. And once in a while, he has to stand up for something. And it's fun to see those moments. I think those are the moments I like most about Harry Kim in general.
Okay, so that's what you liked about the shoot? Was Harry Kim standing up against the man?
He's not being likable, amiable Harry. He's getting some gusto and he's standing up for something. He's ready to fight for his friend. It's out of character for his normal day-to-day demeanor.
Yeah, because he was always one to follow orders, even when the Hirogen took over the ship and he was, you know, tasked with keeping the holodeck and the rest of the ship going. He just followed their orders.
He's such a good ensign that way.
But dude, the Hirogen took over your ship. Do something.
He follows orders so well, you think they would have promoted him a little more.
They might have promoted him. And then when Captain Janeway, you know, had her neural interface deactivated, she demoted him again. Okay, so since we're done with my list of the one episode that I came up with, sorry, listeners, I was a slacker. And you also shared the shoot on your list. What else is on your list, Zachary?
Well, my first pick is in the same vein. Like I said, I like the moments where Harry Kim stands up for something, something that shows his inner spine. Because, again, Harry Kim is very amiable. He goes with the flow. He says, follows orders.
So his inner spine, does he have an outer spine, too? Is that part of his uniform?
He's no jellyfish. Okay. So my first pick is actually from Caretaker, the very first episode, mm-hmm. when Harry Kim says, I don't need anyone to choose my friends for me.
Okay.
He's fresh out of the academy. He's got a bunch of senior officers sitting him down in what's not quite the mess hall yet. You know, wherever they're having lunch before we got a mess hall.
I'm thinking that was the mess hall.
Was it? No, because the mess hall was Captain Janeway's private dining
room. No, that was that's where Neelix cooks. He took over her private dining room and made it into, like, a kitchen for him to cook out of, to serve the people in the mess hall.
Oh, okay. Wait, I think I might have totally misunderstood this. You're saying the private dining room was immediately adjacent to what has always been the mess hall.
Yes.
I had this totally backwards. I had thought that there was this weird place where they were having lunch in Caretaker. And then when Neelix takes over the captain's dining room mm-hmm. and creates a kitchen, that was in a totally different room, not in where they were eating in Caretaker.
That would have been a giant private dining room. On such a small ship for Voyager to have that giant room for just the captain to eat in?
No, I'm absolutely dead serious. That's what I thought until this very moment. I literally always thought that's a gigantic dining room.
Could you see like one of those giant like tables that you would see in like a castle in there and then just the captain sitting at the head and having some soup, some vegetable bouillon?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. That's what I always thought. I thought, wow, that's a gigantic dining room for Neelix to have taken over. What does the captain need such a big dining room for? I literally thought that until just now.
No, because you could kind of see where he cut holes in the wall to serve through, like the pass-through where we would pass food to people.
It's like the scales have fallen from my eyes, and I now see the truth.
I have more of an issue as to why the captain has a private dining room anyway. I mean, did Picard have a private dining room? I don't recall that.
No, if you remember, Captain Picard, according to Worf at least, dines alone in his quarters, presumably.
Okay, so a giant ship like the Enterprise does not have a private captain's dining room, yet tiny Voyager does. I don't get it.
It doesn't seem like the best use of space on a tiny ship.
No, it doesn't.
But getting back to Harry Kim, because I think this is important. He's sitting in the mess hall, what has always been the mess hall, apparently. Surrounded by senior officers who are telling him to stay away from Tom Paris. And he essentially ignores their advice because he thinks Tom Paris is okay from the very beginning. And he doesn't need anyone to choose his friends for him. And I think that's awesome. So it's not a very long scene. It's more like a moment than a scene. But I think it shows Harry Kim's inner strength. And it does a great job of setting the tone for the entire character. And I think that tone persists for the entire series. Generally, Harry's pretty mellow, follows orders, go with the flow. But when push comes to shove, he'll stand up for what he believes in. And those are great scenes, even if they're just moments.
Yeah.
Wow. You really did reorient my thinking about the mess hall. Now I need to rewatch every scene with the mess hall and try to visualize Neelix's kitchen as the captain's dining room. I just assumed that when she said, this used to be my private dining room, that she meant the whole mess hall, like the entire room that they're in.
That would be gigantic.
How have I watched Voyager for what is now 23 years and not realized this?
Think of like the mess hall as a U. Because it's got a door on each side. And then in that little spot, that was her dining room. So a little U inside of it.
Were there always windows in it? Was there like a mini bar? Was there like a...
I don't think she had windows.
So Neelix had to do some serious dining room surgery to turn that into...
Yeah, like he cut into the walls in between the mess hall and her dining room to make the little pass-through area.
So Neelix busted out the space blowtorch. And carved windows into this, what used to be a room.
Yes.
And made a kit. That's like an all-night affair.
He had nothing better to do.
He must have been working on that all night.
He got Kes to help him.
What did Kes do? Maybe she used the
book. Maybe she, I would say, I would trust her with it before I would Neelix. Yeah, because Neelix with a blowtorch, he might singe his fur. That would be bad.
I know this is a little detail, but I just find it interesting that I was so wrong about this. What else am I wrong about Voyager?
It never really happened.
So yeah, caretaker, because I think that sets a good tone for Harry Kim as a character, which persists for the next 7 years. Mm-hmm. Did you think of any others?
No.
Are you just going to stick with this?
I only have one. I'm even looking as you're talking and I'm like, nope. I mean, there's plenty where he just sat on the sidelines and didn't do crap. You know, like the Killing Game where he could have come to everyone's aid sooner and did not. He just followed orders.
Goody two-shoes Harry just following orders. But he doesn't always follow orders. In The Disease, he breaks quite a few orders. And that's next on my list. It's not so much one particular scene because I think he gets some great scenes in The Disease. He gets the scenes where he's...
But I mean, there are reasons why he's breaking the rules. And they're...
Sure, he's principled.
I wouldn't say principled. He's hormonally driven to break the rules.
So I don't just have one scene in The Disease that is my favorite Harry Kim scene, because I think there are some great moments overall inside this episode. We get the scenes with Harry and Tall when he is going through the mental gymnastics of breaking the rules and feeling guilty and doing a great job of just emoting on screen. We get that great, memorable scene when Harry follows Captain Janeway into her ready room. You know, she's ready to send him off to sick bay or maybe send him to the brig even. And he's, you know, standing up to her, you know, making the case for being in love with Tall and saying, Captain, haven't you ever been in love? He's not just following orders there. I don't know if it's principled, but he's at least standing up for himself. And I think it's a really powerful scene. That's more like a scene. That's more like a scene than a moment.
It's definitely not principled because he's being hormonally driven at that point. So it's all his hormones doing the talking.
It becomes principled when he decides not to take the treatment.
Well, yeah, that's at the end. But still, it's hormones. It's all hormones.
But you're not a fan of a scene like that, even an emotionally powerful,
no,
spine-filled scene with Harry.
Because I didn't find it emotionally powerful.
If, as much as I like it, I also maybe don't find it very believable. It's hard to picture Harry yelling at Captain Janeway.
Yeah.
There's something about it that still doesn't really work.
It comes out of nowhere. It's like, no, that's not Harry. Sorry. After all these years, that's not Harry.
She says the very fact that you're acting like this shows that you're not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Which he doesn't appreciate. He doesn't want to be Goody Two-Shoes Harry. He wants to be, you know, the Harry that stands up for himself.
Well, it's a little too late for that because he's been Goody Two-Shoes Harry his entire life.
So if the scenes with Harry and Tall and the scene with Harry and Captain Janeway in her ready room weren't enough, there's this great scene towards the end of the episode in sickbay when Captain Janeway is saying, you know, you were always my favorite. I felt special about you because you were fresh out of the academy. You were so enthusiastic. We got lost in space, and I always just felt like I wanted to look after you. And he said, you know, I appreciate that, but I'm different now. It's 5 years later, and I'm still an ensign, and I'm not as good of an officer as I used to be, and I break rules sometimes. And she's wonderfully compassionate to him. She says, you may not be as good of an officer, but you may be a better man. And that's a powerful moment, and I think he really appreciates being recognized for having grown up on Voyager.
And that's why he wasn't promoted, because they both admit he's not as good of an officer anymore. There's your answer.
Hey, Harry, buddy, you have to wait until you get the promotion before you start breaking the rules.
Or slacking off and not being as good of an officer. Not everyone is Tom Paris and can, you know, skate by.
It does seem odd that Tom breaks so many rules and yet he still gets to be a lieutenant most of the time unless he gets demoted.
That's because he has that delicious little twinkle in his eye and, you know, it's like, oh, Tom.
And what exactly is the problem with everyone getting a promotion anyway? Yes, there needs to be some sort of a command structure, but can't they say something like, okay, Harry, you get to be a lieutenant, and you still get to say yes, sir, to whoever gives you an order?
Well, another thing, nobody ever complains about Captain Janeway not getting promoted. I mean, honestly, she should have been moved up to admiral by now, but she hasn't been.
But captains can stay captains of ships for a long, long time.
Yeah, but they're usually offered things.
That's true. Smart captains turn it down.
Well, not all smart captains turn it down. Captain Kirk didn't turn it down. He should have, but he didn't.
Regretted it. So as I was thinking about Harry Kim moments, yes, we've got the shoot, which has a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a great moment in Caretaker. But in The Disease, I feel like we get a great Harry Kim series of moments, not just one moment. But you don't seem to be as moved by those moments as I am.
No, because he
was... You're so dispassionate. You're so cold.
I am not cold. He was just acting on hormones. It was like he was a teenager.
So he doesn't even get credit for his own great scenes?
No, because it's not him.
It's a shame, though, because I genuinely like Harry as a character, even though it's hard to come up with scenes that are really, truly memorable. I've got one more we can talk about, but... I like the character. I like the tone of the character. I like the enthusiasm he brings to his role, even though it's not terribly important to any of the scenes going on. That youthful enthusiasm, I think, is an important part of being out there on the frontier.
Oh, definitely. And the idea of the character was great, but the execution of the character, it stunk. And it has a lot to do with the writers, because they just didn't seem to care about Harry.
Writers.
What are you going to do?
But Harry Kim did have the honor of having the 100th Voyager episode be a Harry Kim episode. And that was a big deal. 100 episodes of a show is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. That is. It's a very big deal. Syndication, baby!
And that's one of my next picks. I think all of Timeless is a great Harry Kim episode. I think there are some great scenes in there. But the one that really grabs me is the From Harry Kim to Harry Kim moment.
Yes, gray-haired Harry.
Again, it's in true Voyager fashion, it never really happened, mm-hmm. but yet somehow there's this artifact that's produced, a time paradox, and, you know, basically having the weight of having killed the entire Voyager crew on his own, you know, future self shoulders, having to explain to his younger self what happened and how he said it right, and it's just it's not even a great scene per se, it's just a great moment.
It is, and... For Harry to take it the way he took it, he's like, oh, I killed everybody. But you also saved everybody. He dwelled on the wrong thing. So that kind of annoys me.
I just find the whole idea interesting. If you could get a letter from your future self in the mail, wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be great. What a cool concept that is. Oh my gosh, I would have so much to tell my younger self.
So you were thinking you would write a letter to your younger self. I'm like anxiously sitting here waiting for a letter from my older self.
If I did that, then I would have missed out on so many awesome things. I would have missed some really, really awful things, but I wouldn't be where I am right now. Definitely not. And that's sad.
Like, what would 60-year-old Zach say to soon-to-be 40-year-old Zach?
He would tell you to calm down. Listen to Suzanne and calm down about everything. Stop second-guessing everything you say on the podcast. What do you think he would say to you?
I don't know. That's the big question in life, isn't it? You never know what the future is going to hold. And just this idea that, you know, assuming we're still around, you know, not everyone lasts 20 more years, but assuming I'm still around in 20 more years, I wonder what life will have led to, and I wonder what lessons I wish I would have learned.
You don't think you're going to be around for 20 more years?
You never know. Might get hit by a bus. Might die in a transporter accident. You have no idea.
Don't step out in front of the bus and you won't get hit by it, dude. Look both ways.
I guess the thing that's hard about this is that there are lots of little things I like about Harry, the character, and the role that he plays on Voyager, and yet it's hard to nail those down to even a specific scene or a specific moment. I like the Buster Kincaid stuff with Captain Proton. I love the clarinet stuff. I love Harry Kim and the Kim tones. I love Harry Kim playing his clarinet on the bridge. I love Harry and the Delaney sisters.
I love Tom playing pranks on Harry.
Okay, you came up with something else you love. That's great.
Like changing out the girl that Harry was kissing to a cow. I mean, come on. That's awesome. But then,
yes, that was hilarious. Come on, that's a great Harry Kim scene.
But no, it's not Harry that makes that scene. It's Tom that makes that scene. So therefore, even the scenes that I'm coming up with, it's not a love of Harry, it's a love of Tom.
I know, I'm trying to help Harry out here.
Yeah. Sorry, Harry.
I like that Harry and B'Elanna call each other Starfleet and Maquis. Little things like that, they're not really even moments. They're just aspects of Harry the character that I find interesting. And I think they're all, collectively, they make an interesting character to me.
But that started as B'Elanna saying that.
So what? They kept it up.
So to me, that's a B'Elanna thing.
That's a B'Elanna thing?
To me, it is. To you, it can be a Harry thing. To me, it's a B'Elanna thing.
Boy, you give Harry no credit whatsoever.
Well, okay, I will give him the credit of taking baby Naomi to the other Voyager. So he has that.
That's another great little Harry mini moment, the weird is part of the job moment. And yes, that's Captain Janeway saying that, yes, but that is Harry trying to understand, like, this is Voyager, but it's not my Voyager, and yet I'm here and nothing's changed and it's so weird. That's Harry does a great job of just saying how weird that is.
Well, if you were in that situation, wouldn't that kind of freak you out? Be like, everything's different, but it's the same at the same time.
Yeah, it's strange because it's not like there were always two Voyagers. It's not like a different dimension. It's that Voyager got quantumly split into two in some way. And so it's not like it's a different dimension even. It's not. So in a sense, it is the same Voyager. It's just a quantum duplicate.
Yeah, it's that weird science stuff.
It is tragic to remember that the real Harry Kim died, yeah.
He died a lot. Harry died a lot.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about that. Harry does die a lot. What do you think about that? And he doesn't even get a great death scene either. Like, there are great death scenes in Star Trek. You know, Spock death scene in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Great death scene.
Kirk in Generations. I cry each time. The first one where he's just gone, and then the second one, the bridge. I cry each time at both.
I'm so glad you say that, because a lot of people don't like the way Kirk died, and they don't find it very moving at all, and I happen to think those scenes were remarkably effective, so I like those Kirk death scenes. I think they count as great death scenes. But Harry doesn't even get a great death scene. Not a really memorable one.
No, but I think if they actually went through with the 8472 death that they were gonna do, that would have been memorable.
Yes, that could be. It's the death scene that could have been. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a shame, because if you're going to kill a character, might as well give them a good death scene. Throw the actor a bone.
Yeah, because, Captain Janeway gets great death scenes. Because she dies a whole lot, too.
The writers did a good job. It's up to the writers to create a good death scene, and the writers failed to give Harry a good death scene as much as they killed him.
The writers failed to give Harry a good anything.
Well, we came up with a few good moments that I liked more than you did, apparently.
They just, they didn't try hard with Harry. Or Chakotay. especially Chakotay.
It's interesting you say that because I think there's some similarities with the way they handled Harry and the way they handled Chakotay. Chakotay has that enthusiasm as well. You know, he likes being an archaeologist. He gets excited about some stuff. And yet they totally didn't know what to do with him sometimes.
Yeah.
And so he ends up standing around saying, yes, Captain. Well, all this interesting stuff is going on.
Just sitting on the bridge poking at buttons. Yeah. Such a disservice.
Harry had this youthful enthusiasm. And Chakotay has that enthusiasm about other things like archaeology. And I think that was an important part of those characters, and they added a qualitative element to the show. And it's hard to even pin it down to a specific scene. But yeah, the writers just didn't know what to do with that to give them a scene adequate for those qualitative elements that they added to the show.
Yeah.
What do you think of Harry in Command of the Night Shift? Those are some of my favorite Harry scenes when Harry gets to play Captain at night.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Nightingale.
No, I actually mean in Command of the Night Shift, not Command of that other ship, but Command of Voyager awful. On the night shift.
He was awful.
Harry really gets to be in command sometimes, like in Future's End when he's in command of Voyager, you know, orbiting Earth, and B'Elanna's there on the bridge as chief engineer, and Harry, the ensign, gets to give B'Elanna orders. That's amazing to me. He does a great job being in command. That's actually a great Harry scene. While it lasts. It's not a very long scene. It's a moment.
It's not a long scene at all. It's so short that I don't even remember it.
And even B'Elanna has to tell him, Harry, you're in charge. You decide. He's just so eager to be in command of the night shift. I think it's really interesting. And he gets to be. And he tells his parents he's in command of the ship sometimes.
He's so eager to do anything.
Yeah, don't you? You don't seem to like that about him, though.
No, I do, but they never give him anything to do.
He does lots of things. He gets to be in command. He gets to go on away missions. He gets to...
Neelix gets to go on away missions.
What do you wish they would have done? If you have this baseline respect for Harry, if you don't think he's a bad character, if you think he's an underused character, what do you wish they would have done to really let Harry's scenes rise to the occasion?
I wish they would have fleshed out his character more instead of just using him as, what you said, comic relief, just to drop a line here and there, or to just be whiny, which is mostly what they gave him, these whiny lines. Oh, I want to go home.
So I'm trying to think what else they could have done with Harry. Like, could they have given more backstory to his character? Could they have given him a relationship to be in? Could they have promoted him? Could they have given him a moral dilemma to chew on? Like, any one of those things would have been interesting, and I wish they would have done all those things.
At least one of them would have been a step in the right direction.
But I think despite that, they did a decent job of adding nuances to Harry over the course of the years.
Playing a clarinet isn't a nuance.
Yeah, they do seem to milk the clarinet thing a lot.
And then they really shouldn't have had to have him move on to the saxophone.
That's character development, isn't it?
He's not a saxophone player, I'm sorry.
Come on, that's character development, isn't it, Suzanne?
No.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day that I like the few good scenes that Harry gets. I like the quality of his character. I like some of the tapestry they added to his character, interests and how he spends his time and what he does for other characters. I think he helps Tom be Tom. And I think that is an important part of Harry's character, even though it's not about Harry per se. But yeah, he's massively underutilized. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a testament to his character. The fact that we think he's has the seed of a good character, and yet he's underutilized. It's not that we don't like Harry. It's that Harry doesn't get his due.
Yeah.
So you're not a Harry hater.
No, I'm not a Harry hater. I'm not a Harry liker. Harry,
you're
I could just
neutral
do
on Harry.
But they did Garrett a disservice by not fleshing out that character and letting him act in anything more than just a background type area.
I actually think it's a shame that we think of TV shows as finite, like, you know, they have their 5 years or 7 years or however many years the show lasts. You know, some shows aren't like that. Some shows just go on. They might have cast changes and whatnot, but the show persists. Like, nighttime talk shows are like this. Like, The Tonight Show, it's still
Saturday
around.
Night Live.
People have come and gone. Saturday Night Live is like that. Exactly. Why?
The Simpsons.
So why doesn't Star Trek get that treatment, where it just goes on? You know, we get to have Voyager happening now with cast members coming and going, and some of them stay for the long haul, and some of them don't. And it would be fun to see 20 years of Harry Kim.
So Voyager's still trying to get home, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do 70 years worth of TV show. You know, the whole journey home.
Oh, poor Kate Mulgrew.
You'd have to have a serious commitment to the importance of playing that role to sign up for a 70-year TV show.
Wow, yeah.
Can you imagine, though, signing up for a show, like, you know it's not just going to be 7 years, but it's going to be 70 years, that you may not last as long as the show, and they might have to deal with the fact that the actor died and make that part of the show?
They've done that on, like, Days of Our Lives and other daytime soap operas. They've done that.
General Hospital is a great example of this kind of thing. It's been around forever. Mm-hmm. Is General Hospital still around?
I have no idea. I don't even know if Days of Our Lives is, but they did.
I feel like General Hospital is probably still around. And I'm not saying we should turn Star Trek into a soap opera, but I think the idea that there should be room to flesh out these characters and see their development for the long run, not just squeeze everything into these little tiny finite moments in some handful of years. Like part of the reason that Harry doesn't get his due is that there's so many other things they wanted to do, other characters they wanted to emphasize, that there's just not enough room to give Harry the great stuff that he deserves. You can't do that with all characters in 7 years and have enough room to do everything you want to do in the show. And if you had twice as many years or 20 years or 30 years and all the characters were signed on board, they're going to run out of other stuff to do. Of course, they're going to write a Harry Kim episode.
But really, what actor's going to sign on to do that?
I guess soap opera actors do, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Like the actor that plays Victor Newman on The Young and the Restless. He's been around about forever, like since I was a kid, and he's still on the show from what I remember. Some actors do sign up for 30 years. They have to renew their contracts and stuff, but yeah.
I don't see that happening a lot anymore.
It would just be an interesting way to give more characters their on-screen time they deserve. And it would be a natural fit for Voyager.
Yeah, but, oh, you have to feel for that actor that signs up for that. Because, man, then they don't get to take on any other projects. They're roped into this one role forever. That's...
job security, yeah.
That's sad. As an actor, you're creative and you want to explore different characters and different emotions and different settings. And if you're just stuck as one character for your entire life, that's stifling your creativity.
I guess there's something to be said for having a regular paycheck as an actor.
Regular paycheck or being able to use your gift in different ways. Yeah, I don't know that that's a good trade-off.
Boy, that's a dilemma in life in general, isn't it? So if Voyager had taken that approach, a long-term, you know, General Hospital / Saturday Night Live / Tonight Show approach, you know, the same show for the long haul, we could have actually seen old Harry Kim on screen, not just alternate timeline old Harry Kim. So I hope we set the record straight a little bit. It's not so much that either one of us hates Harry Kim. You're not a huge Harry Kim fan, but it's not because you hate Harry Kim. It's because you think Harry is underutilized and his scenes aren't as good as they should have been, could have been, wish they would have been. Whatever, but it's not a Harry Kim hatred. In fact, I really genuinely like the character of Harry Kim. As I mentioned, there are a lot of things I like about him, but yes, massively underutilized, and I think that's a little sad and not a great use of the amazing acting of Garrett Wong.
Yeah, exactly. Well, talking about the disservice that the writers did to Harry Kim isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
All right. And as for Avery Brooks' ability to portray this mirror Sisko in a way that was believable to everyone else. I mean,
it's
just
awesome.
It's his personality. It's
yes.
Like he's in a way better as a mirror than he is as Prime, right?
Continuing mission.
I saw his Romulan Stormbird ship. Which is impressive, I have to say. You know,
a good looking ship. Yeah,
yeah, it is a good looking ship.
It's a good looking ship.
Awesome firepower.
Yeah, yeah, it is Starfleet's worst nightmare in our film. At least until a certain point, when Starfleet, I guess, regroups and makes a comeback and figures out how to beat Stormbird.
To the journey.
I think what I love about the Captain Proton sequence is it's such a Tom and Harry bromance thing. It's like Geordi and Data playing Sherlock Holmes on The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. It's so charming. Would you be Captain Proton or would you be Buster Kincaid if we were doing Captain Proton right now?
I can't be one of the good guys. I'm sorry.
You would be Arachnia. Or no, you would be Chaotica.
I think I'd be Chaotica's henchman.
Oh, okay. Yes. I see that.
Yeah, because I don't want to be the fully evil dude who's everybody's trying to destroy. I want to be the guy behind the evil dude.
See, I could totally pop out and go, the jig is up.
Yeah, you could.
Captain Proton is here. I'd be a great Captain Proton.
Oh, no, I saw you more as Buster Kincaid.
Oh, really? I'm a Buster Kincaid? Oh, man. Thanks, Suzanne. Isn't that the way of things in life? You view yourself as a Captain Proton, but really you're a Buster Kincaid.
Standard orbit.
To me, Star Trek history is like Earth history. It's like, oh, yeah, well, in 2265, the Enterprise looked like this. That's ridiculous. That'd be like if you make a movie about New York in the 1950s and the World Trade Center is there. Like, oh, well, that's wrong. That's not how it was, you know? But I have to remember that this is fiction, and we're all here to have a good time.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are lots of ways that you can share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Well, Suzanne, when you're not checking your email for a letter from your future self, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8, and you can also find me occasionally popping up in the Babel Conference. And Zachary, when you're not playing your clarinet on Night Shift, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can also find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of our To the Journey team from around the network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, and the longest-serving ensign in Starfleet, by the way. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout-out to our five associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Well, join us next time when we figure out how difficult it is to switch from clarinet to saxophone. But until then, this has been To the Journey.